Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
Welcome to Tabby Hour.
Oh, shit. Oh.
And we'll throw it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, you can. Okay. Hey, listeners.
Welcome back to another great episode.
Welcome back to your local Tabby Hour. I'm Cousin, as you've known from past episodes, sitting here with two of my dear friends. On either side of me. And we won't leave Brad out. He's in there too. My two good brewing friends, Kenny Driggers and Jared Tuttle. Marshall, introduce yourselves. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Jared Tuttle, Brewer at Liability Brewing Company.
Head brewer?
Head brewer recently, yes. Thank you.
Congrats.
Thank you. Appreciate it. We've been around for a little over 4 years now and just trying to make some clean, drinkable beers.
As you do.
Yeah. Thank you.
Kenny Driggers, head brewer guy of Southernside Brewing, Double Stamp Brewery, and Silos Brewing out in Easley. Oversee all brew operations and try to, help my brewers do their best.
Ultimate multitasker.
Yeah. Bounce around.
I'm not looking forward to it.
Yeah, you're going to be there soon.
Oh, yeah. In a recap, I'm Cousin Adam of Magnetic South Brewery in Anderson, South Carolina, soon to be Greenville and Clemson, hopefully in 2023.
We're going to be neighbors very soon.
Very soon.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
What's the opening date?
February 2nd. Hey, better be ready. I'm getting married there on the 18th, so.
Maybe you should get married before and then open.
Invitations are going out next week, so it better be ready.
Well, so kind of kicking off with, Cousin, you reached out to me, and we're gonna dive into Thomas Creek and the story there, and the legend that Tom was and is in Greenville. But where do you guys want to start with that? I mean, when he called me and was like, let's talk about Tom, let's talk about the life of Tom, let's talk about the legend that he was in the beer industry in Greenville. It's like, absolutely. When can we start?
Yeah, and we really could have had about 15 more people sitting here right now, but I figured the three of us could probably tell the story that we know the best. So as many people know, Tom Davis passed away about 4 weeks ago of a rare form of cancer that kind of came on very suddenly. So there is a GoFundMe out there. At the legacyliveson.org.
The legacyliveson.org.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget the.
Yeah, and we'll make sure and link it.
Yep. And there's some information on there just about everything. There's posters. If you're a brewer or brew beer, there's a recipe on there, too, so you can brew it yourself. You can reach out to
either. And what is the recipe? You mean the famous Thomas Creek Red Ale?
Oh, I was like, I thought you wanted me to say the ingredients. But yeah, no. So it is River Falls Red. We have changed the name for this to the Legacy. And there's some pretty cool artwork on there, which you can just get printed, make stickers, put it around town. Just help keep everything alive. So as a lot of people know, Tom had cultivated this great community by having a lot of people come there, work there, and move on from there. It was somewhere where I got my start. Both these gentlemen sitting next to me got their start. Before I left to open Magnetic South, we had done a collaboration called Azure Senior. And I think it was 14. I think it was 14 different breweries where either people had started at Thomas Creek
or associated or had some reason, something he did for them.
Yep, and then they had went on to start their own thing, work somewhere else or whatever. So
that was a good time.
Yeah, I'll let Kenny start the story because as the one who started there before Jared and myself.
As your senior.
I won't say it.
No.
And just kind of lead off where he came in and then Jared and I will.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess Thomas Creek started in
98
is when they were officially open.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, they did start 97.
Or is that Henny's in 97, right?
Henny's, yeah.
Yep.
So I started January of 2014 unemployed at Thomas Creek. I was in my final semester at Clemson, really wanted to get into brewing. I've been homebrewing since I was 19 and like not a ton of time, but at the time, it's not like everyone and their brother was doing it. And I actually applied to another upstate brewery and got denied because I didn't need the class credit. I was in my final semester and I just didn't want to do a desk job. So I went into Thomas Creek, work pants on. I knew what brewing was supposed to be. And I said, hey, where can I help?
Did you, though, at that time? Oh, did you know what brewing was supposed to be?
No, well, I had an idea. I had done a ton of research on, like, you know, what I wanted to do in life. And I didn't want to sit behind a desk. And I figured, well, now's the time to see if this is right for me. So I volunteered for 6 months. I mean, I was put on the schedule. And it's not like I was just a guy that showed up. They're like, hey, what time are you going to be here? And so started, I think, kind of how most people in commercial brewing did, by washing kegs, cleaning tanks, digging out grain.
For free.
For about 6 months, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so after graduation, I was there all but full time. No money, just trying to figure out what to do. And broke my hand in a motorcycle wreck. And I was like, well, this whole free work thing isn't working out for me. So I went to a bottle shop, worked there for a couple months, and then got a call.
What bottle shop was that one?
The Wall of Beer in
Clemson.
Oh. Yeah. So then there was only like a 2 month period where I didn't work there, I guess. And I got a call from Andrew Myers, who was running the homebrew shop at the time, and said, so Tom was asking about you. That guy that showed up and worked for free for all this time, does he want a job? And I was like, yeah, I do. And he was like, do you want to start on the packaging side? I'm like, no, I want to brew. Like, I know this game. Yeah, I actually got hired on, like, officially probably in September of 2014.
And then who was there with you, like, in that time? So that was Whit Lanning, Zach Newton, Thomas Westmoreland. Was Brett Terrapin brewing yet? Or was he keg washing?
Carl Cross, who went to brewing school in England, he actually helped open Flying Machine in Wilmington, North Carolina. He was there. Mike Murphy was there. Whit Lanning and Zach Newton. Thomas Westmoreland was as well. But he started technically after I did, but you know, he was a real employee, so he got a few more benefits.
Those were like the golden years, I felt like, you know.
Yeah,
like worked there. Now has all the
centrifuge yet. No centrifuge yet,
but a nice beer pong table that didn't bounce.
Yeah. I mean, it was crazy early on. Like, we were in 11 states in 2015. We were 14-ish thousand barrels. It was
send a beer overseas too, yeah, right? I mean, were you sending beer to Europe or
was it Sweden? Something like that.
I don't remember.
It was a time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was the heyday, I guess, of Thomas Creek, and being more of a night owl. When we had 24-hour brewing, I volunteered for the night shift. So don't know why Tom trusted a 24-year-old to be in that 23,000 square foot facility alone at night with, you know,
full of beer.
Yeah, I mean, like, what am I supposed to do?
Look, man, I mean, that place used to be closed on Sundays, and we would go up there and just have full game days. Like, there was a lot of it was a good benefit of that place to just show up. And what was that game we always played in it with the figures?
Warhammer.
Like, you just go in a tap room and there'd be like a map all over everywhere of just stuff, you know.
That was like the house.
Yeah.
The house, the party, not the party house, but the friend's house that you knew you could always go to, and there was something fun to do.
Yeah. So then, I mean, I saw a couple different people in the homebrew shop come up, and when I moved to North Dakota, I mean, so I guess talking about the legacy of Tom and the opportunities that we got, he knew it was a stepping stone for a lot of people.
And he was pretty upset about that for a while.
He told me I had big plans for you here. And I was like, well, those last two raises I asked for, what about that? But, you know, he did have a plan. I was like, well, I wish the plan was more money right away, but that's a selfish thing maybe. But yeah, I mean, cuz you were running the homebrew shop, like helping on the brew side when I left in the world for the first time.
For sure. And I remember, 16. I think I even had started talking to you then. about how I didn't want to go into production. And I've talked about it in a lot of my podcasts, you know, and you were like, why don't you just come try it out?
Yeah, you were helping me mill in. And I was like, are you going to do this for real? And you're like, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll, you know, I'd like to leave my options open. Yeah, so I came on when you left
because
Thomas Westmoreland left slightly. Actually, Zach Newton left just before you left. And I thought I would have my chance. And I think we waited to hire somebody in the production side, which was a common thing. Someone would leave and we would dilly-dally. And then I think you left and it was me, Brett Terrapin, Zach, and Witt for a little while because you and Thomas left at the same time. I had met Jared because Jared used to come in and teach the homebrew classes like once a month. And I mean, you were pretty, I would say, a regular. You were coming in there a bunch.
I was definitely a regular.
I mean, hanging out. You and what was the, who did the PLC stuff? The tech guy that used to hang out all the time.
You guys wore the same shirt too because he came after work.
Kyle. It was Kyle.
It was.
And then like Christian, you guys were always like hanging out, you know.
I mean, and Christian would help with like even the finances, stuff like that on the other side.
Building all those spreadsheets that we used
exactly.
to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
May have stolen that.
The spreadsheets?
Yeah, to help build a brewery, but whatever.
Hey, you know.
They were good spreadsheets.
They were really good.
He's a smart dude.
I mean, that's just multi-level pages and pages and pages.
And they all referenced each other. And then so like when I tried to print it out and it just said hashtag reference.
But yeah, so I came on, started brewing. And I want to say that was the end of the OBP days. I think I had brewed a couple OBP a couple times. I mean, obviously a big part of that whole thing was learning the contracts more than.
60% of what we did when I was there was contract brewing.
And I think when I came on, it was slowly starting that shift.
They were about 50-50.
Yeah. So but I think we were still doing like 10,000, 12,000 barrels a year. I think my first year, you know, we were running two full shifts, four people needed.
So how does that work? What's the difference in contract brewing versus?
So basically contract brewing, there's a couple ways you can look at it. It could be a brewery that's open and producing beer that can't keep up with their own demand. So if Jared called me tomorrow and said, hey, look, I need to brew like 40 barrels of beer right now.
Liability is out of space.
Liability is out of space.
I've got a big event coming up.
Yeah. Or
I can't supply, I can't supply beer to a county or something like that. Like Charleston. It's like, man, they're drinking so much of it. I can't keep up with Greenville and I can't keep up with Charleston.
So he could come to me or to Thomas Creek. Mm-hmm. Not to Magnetic South, and say, hey, I need you to brew some beer for me. You know, he would give them a recipe. Then that said contract brewery would source the ingredients, do a couple test batches, get it dialed in for their system, because everyone's system's a little bit different. You know, Jared runs, actually he runs steam, so it'd be kind of similar. Mm-hmm. But for me, I have a direct fire. To go on a steam system, you would see, you know, a little difference there.
I mean, me and Kenny were even talking about it the other day. Like, his mash tun is taller than mine.
Yeah.
And mine's a little wider, and that changes it. Just
same exact recipe.
True. How you rinse, how like the water rinses over the grain. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then water is a whole big thing, too. Water. Tom could have, at Thomas Creek, Jared's got different water than.
Yeah, well, we're all maybe not as
double
stack.
Double stack might be the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Southern side's different. It's just, you know, pipes and everything's a little where it's different. Coming
from. I want to go back real quick on what you said about like recipes. There was a number of times, like specifically Tom would help them come up with a recipe. So you could approach as, you know, Tabby and say, hey, I really want to make this West Coast grapefruit forward IPA, but I don't want to use fruit. And he could help build a recipe. And he did that for a number of
City
people.
Range.
Yeah.
Everybody's
Tabby, Tabby PA.
We might need to do that.
Do that, make your own beer, and then you go to a brewery like that can do the capacity, right. And they brew it, and they package it, and they send it out, and you know you pay them to make it, and then you sell it.
And that's how Tom expanded so fast, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, he was building Thomas Creek. It was a name, right? I think when I was there, we were in 14 states.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, he was one of the only guys in the area brewing beer.
In the area, for sure. I mean, most people had to go to Florida for Brew Hub in order to do the same size volumes, because you know, like,
was Asheville kicked off yet?
With their not in the same sense. Like, even when I started, so I mean, now we're over 9,000 breweries in the country. When I started, we were under 2,500. And I feel like I was late to the game. I don't want to say old soul, but like I knew what I wanted to do. You know, my dad homebrewed when I was a kid, when there was like one homebrew shop in the upstate and one brewery. But yeah, I mean, it definitely was like the early days
on that. I mean, the laws were a big thing. That's what changed a lot.
So back still, in the day, the laws here are still trash.
Yeah, they're bad. They're not beneficial to our business.
Who's lobbying for that?
Well,
I don't know the person's name. The guild just hired a lobbyist. Yes. I mean, we are progressing, right?
Well, I mean, so not there like was hire a year, lobbyist, but like, how do we get everybody in the community that's local together to go, hey, this doesn't work?
We're building, right? So yes. The guild went through, and Jared probably knows a little bit more because Terry's on the guild, but the guild kind of went through this building year, right? It kind of diminished once Tom, Chris Brown out of Holy City, Jamie from Coast, like these guys were like Brooke Bristow. They were the big frontier to help get the pint law changed.
Yes.
Mark from
on that note, real Rockers. Quick, though, when I started at Thomas Creek,
there wasn't even a tap room?
No, there wasn't a tap room. So where the tap room is now, we used to store empty kegs there.
Mm-hmm.
So like I helped put the doors on in that tap room, and I was like, yeah, I could do this. I'd never done that before. And I like over drilled the hole and I was like, whoop, we got to get something else. But yeah, I mean, it was crazy to work at a production facility that couldn't even serve you in the tap room.
Well, remember the cask nights? Cask nights were fun.
Oh, cask nights were fun.
It's like $5 or $10 and you get to try samples. You get this free samples. It's $5 to get in.
You would buy, so at Rockers, you would take a tour, buy mm-hmm. a glass. You get a $5 glass. You know, yeah.
The tickets, you know, the tour comes as free samples. So that's how like used to be able to get around it. So you pay somebody to come in and then you give the beer away for free. So when those laws started changing, I mean, even Tom back in the day was trying to change the laws, and Up Creek came out because the ABV limit was set. But then when those laws changed that where now you can sell beer in your brewery, people are like, well, I want to open a brewery. It's like opening a bar, you know? So then you start getting the influx of mm-hmm. breweries. Even at the time, like Quest opened right around then. And there's just a change of mentality of how you run a brewery at that point, because you want people to come in your tap room, not be in every grocery store bar in the state.
Well, and the margins are better. I mean, yes. Infinitely better. You're not paying the three-tiered system in South Carolina, paying a wholesaler.
Exactly.
And then the retailer, you know, you're getting that all yourself. So it really is supporting local businesses. I mean, even when you're at the grocery store now, it's like you're paying two other people's hands, and likely the brewery didn't even make the most money on it.
Me and Kenny have restaurants right next to our brewery. Mine is literally connecting walls, and we would have to sell beer to the distributor, which they would then physically put it on their truck and then physically take it off and then sell it to the person next.
Well, actually, it's supposed to hit their warehouse. Where's
Well, you said they have to take it to Duncan. Ours would be Duncan.
Yeah.
So they go all the way to Duncan, drop it off Yeehaw, at the warehouse, the bring it back, and then sell it to the restaurant right next to us.
Yeehaw, they got to brew beer because it's different address. Sell it to, I think they use Gringo.
They do.
So Rays. They
there's a
it goes to the
cycle
truck.
Bar right in between them.
Yep. It goes out to a truck. They take it down to Piedmont Highway, put it on the dock, and then they buy it back for their restaurant.
Yeah.
Because at least a 30% markup.
So I had no idea any of this mm-hmm. existed until you and I met, and I was like, this is delicious beer. How do we get this everywhere? And you're like, nah, bro.
North Carolina is easy. You can put it in the back of your truck and go sell it.
That's why there's so many breweries, too. I mean, the water up there is great, too, which helps. But
yeah.
Just the area and how you can sell beer, like, it's easy.
That's insane.
But so, I mean, like Thomas Creek, right, they saw the pint law change, right, mm-hmm. where you could now sell a pint of beer. So they built a tap room. And then while I was there, they saw the Stone Law bill change when Stone was thinking about coming here. And they changed the law. So if you had a restaurant, and it doesn't really say a restaurant, you have to have
kitchen.
A DHEC approved kitchen and keep enough food for 40 people, you can then sell as much beer per person per day for on-premise as you feel comfortable serving that person. So, you know, you can come in, have 6 pints, and as long as you're not, I say 6, but, you know.
Right. Well, because otherwise it's 48 ounces per person per day. So specifically Thomas Creek, talking about Up the Creek, is if I wanted to go there and hang out for the 10 hours that it's open, you're saying I'm limited 48 ounces? If I drink the vanilla cream ale at, you know, sub 5% or whatever, I can have the same amount versus 48 ounces of Up the Creek. That's 12.5% alcohol. I could slam those in 15 minutes and be absolutely hammered. But by the letter of the law, it's the same as if I had three Bud Lights in the same, or like, you know, all day.
Legally, I could have three beers at my at a brewery, like my brewery, and then go to the place next door and have as many Bushwhackers as I'd like.
And that's why, folks, I am in the restaurant game, and it's not fun.
And that's why Tom pivoted and built a kitchen. I mean, Tom came from that background, and he, you know, he was a great cook, but didn't want to do it for other people.
And he was a great carpenter, great engineer. I mean, you know, like
many
there
traits.
Wasn't a thing in that brewery that Tom hadn't fixed or built, which is, I mean, you know, you just talk about some great work experience to be able to go to a place like that and say, all right, we got to build a kitchen because this can now happen and we need to build it fast. And it was like, all right, well, Josh can handle the brewing in the afternoon. I'll come in and brew in the morning and then stay and help you build a kitchen. I mean, we had to do that kitchen floor, what, three times? I mean, the first time we put it down, it bubbled. Like the second time we put it down, it did a self level. Or no, maybe it did. And then a drum of acid fell and leaked under the floor and stripped the floor off. You know, like, but you know, it was just experience, right? You learned. I now learned how to like deal with this floor. I learned how to build these walls.
What
you know?
Acid does to a floor.
What? I mean, and not that kind of acid, folks.
So where does everybody start? When they come to the brewery, what's the first job?
There's a lot.
Washing kegs.
Mm. But volunteering on the packaging line?
That's a lot of people start there.
A lot of people started volunteering on the
I'm packaging assuming line. Everybody doesn't start working for free.
No, not like that. It's just one of those things.
Well, in a way, somebody there was a lot of Renee volunteered. Brett, didn't he volunteer washing kegs?
He did.
He volunteered.
I used to throw it out there. Like, we would put it on our social media that said, like, two free cases of beer if you come help on the packaging side. And people were like, oh, sweet. I go help at a brewery. It was like 8 hours on the packaging side just moving bottles.
Get a case of beer.
Yeah. I'm never doing that.
Well, it was one of those things, too, though. Like, you'd be, like, a regular at the brewery. And then, somebody didn't show up. It's like, well, I'll help out and get a case of beer or whatnot. And the bottling line's just me. You're just taking bottles and putting them in boxes.
I've moved a couple kegs for some free drinks.
Yeah. I mean, why not?
To put it super vague, whatever needed to be done. I mean, like, Tom didn't say, like, well, everyone gets to start by doing this. It was literally if whatever packaging demanded or brewing demanded or keg washing, it was like, hey, we need bodies. We need people that are just willing to move stuff. Brewing's super manual. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just wherever people aren't getting fatigued or an employee can take a break for a second, just moving bottles around.
And I will definitely give props to those packaging line boys, like everyone or people, because that was a damn job. I mean, you know, we'd have to go back there sometimes, just work like the 5 hour, 6 hour, 8 hour shift. And it sucks. Because, I mean, it was so manual. It was you pick the bottle up off the pallet and you put it on this belt and take it off this belt, put it on this belt, take it off that belt, put it in a six pack, glue that, pick it up.
I would always count how many steps I'd have to take and try and like limit, like get bring it back, you know.
It was just so monotonous. I mean, you know, the same. And I'm just not that kind of person. Like Mimi, she loves like packaging. She loves that monotony or whatever.
Assembly line kind of.
Yeah.
So we're obviously everybody in the beer business, but what is this brown bottle here?
So this is a special bottle of liquor. Super special. That we got from Tom, I don't know, like 3 years ago, maybe four years, something like that. Mm. Tom used to love drinking Pappy. Pappy it blew up like all the bourbon and whiskeys did, where it got very expensive and hard to find. So he wanted to make a product recreate a product that resembled Pappy. So we got some new barrels. Some little 5 gallon barrels, put a bunch of liquor 15. In there.
They're
15 as they were. And then like put them away for 3 years. And then, you know, we would try them like every year and it was like, oh man, I think they're ready. And he just, you know, just went and had at it. So we finally like got them. A bunch of us helped empty them, bottle them. In 1 year, your last year? No, you were gone already.
Yeah, I was
already gone. 1 year for Christmas, and that's when you left right before Christmas.
Yeah.
We were talking about that earlier.
2018. Yeah,
he gave them out to us. So,
super limited amount. I mean, 2 15-gallon barrels pre-evaporation.
Like well, I cases. Did. That's what I was about to say earlier. That I didn't even get a bottle like until
yeah.
a year ago. When did as we do senior. As your senior? When we did that. And we were all together.
Year and a half ago, yeah, something like that.
And we got to see Tom tear up for the first time, like, and, and you know, had a nice little toast. And then he came and brought me a bottle. I was like, okay, we're good.
Man, come on over. I want some of that.
There it is.
So it's, I mean, also special. Cause, yeah, he did give these to us, but then also, like, it doesn't exist anywhere else. Mm-hmm. It's not like you can pay for this mm-hmm. anywhere. I mean,
and well, it's good. That's we were talking about it earlier. It's
honor to share this with you guys.
One of the few.
That's a big drinks.
To Tom.
Well, cheers to Tom. Tom.
Cheers.
Damn it. This is
salute down there.
Come on, Brad. Hold on.
Ah, this smells great.
Damn. Oh, that's special.
So good. I don't know. How does he. That was something other about something other another thing special about Tom. So, like, he worked at a you know, kitchen, or what's that? What he did it?
Whatever. Yeah. So he was cooked, Ruby right? Tuesdays. He ran Ruby Tuesdays.
He'd cook. He'd have all these amazing flavors cooking, and then whenever he opened the brewery, like making things that weren't just made every day. Mm. You didn't go to a bar back when they opened and have a red ale or a Doppelbock, you know, yeah. You know, stuff like that, and he would just make it. And he always had that amazing taste
for. He had a great palate.
Yeah, amazing palate. Yeah. To his barbecue, his food, I cannot tell you how many like Christmases we go over and
like 1 year he wanted an alligator so bad.
Yes.
He found an alligator and wrapped that thing in bacon, did a bacon weave like sweater and smoked it. I mean, you know, like so for every year he would hold this big party, and I think this stemmed from his time at Blockhouse, which he was. If you go to the Blockhouse, you can go around and look at like some of the posters from the 80s.
It's like 87 and 92. You can see their Halloween parties, and he's
and
there.
He's in all of them.
As many times I've been there, I never saw all those pictures until we went. Like,
oh, yeah. Me either.
Like, but once you see him, you can't unsee it.
No, there he is.
But yeah, so
it's short shorts,
it's short tank top,
that mustache, yeah. Baby, that mustache.
Ooh.
But yeah, he had these huge parties at the brewery called Brew Bash. So we used to do a pre-Brew Bash party where everyone would stay all night.
That's fast.
You know,
we would cook.
You're not
cook
supposed
barbecue.
To talk about it. But yeah, so he'd stay up all night smoking like all Fight these Club. Butts, right? Like 1 year we had 6 smokers out there smoking like 25 cases of butts. You know, I'm talking about like we'd rub these butts down and we'd have 53-gallon trash cans full of rub that he made.
Or coleslaw.
Yeah. Or coleslaw. Like,
it's terrible.
You know, you're prepping for 1,000 people to come to this thing. Jeez. You know, just like nuts.
He'd make this amazing potato salad and stuff. Like, how are you making that much?
So he's a professional caterer, too.
Oh, yeah. So we used to, like, he would cook something for us for Assfest. And 1 year, it was like, all right, Tom, like, do ribs. So we like, okay, we'd, like, go get 5 cases of ribs. He'd bring in another smoker, and it's like, all right, how many ribs you want? It's like, I'll take a rack of ribs. You know, like everyone's just walking around with a personal rack of ribs. But I mean, like anything. I mean, brisket to the fastest oyster shucker. I mean, the story yeah. that he would tell of like, you know, just being able to shuck a dozen oysters in like 26 seconds.
Did he build that steamer? Didn't he?
No, he
built that.
Okay.
But Tom was just like competitive. I think that's what drove him to make mm-hmm. like really good everything, but not in an overtly like aggressive way where like he's going to challenge you to something. He would just like the internal challenge that, you know, I think that's why he built so much stuff there. And instead of calling someone, you know, hey, how do I weld this? He learned to do sanitary welding, back gassing everything. And like, I mean, who does that? It's incredible. And then like when I was brewing there, didn't know when or how I would need it, but it's like anytime something breaks, which when you're doing, you're in 14 states, you're doing 14,000 barrels or whatever, something's going to break.
Every day.
So then he did make a point to like, in a way, nurture me. You know, like he would come Twice. Find me if he was like, hey, this pump head or whatever it was, he would come find me and say like, you ever seen how to change this? I'm like, no, like I just got done studying packaging at Clemson. Like we didn't study how to break down this manifold in a brewery, but thanks for showing me. And so, yeah, it advance my career so quickly.
The glycol system that he built, like fixing that, like the first time I broke down a pump because the pump broke, and it was after my hours. He came back to me and was like, I know you just clocked out, man, but can you like come out? I'm like, Tom, of course. Like, I'm here to help. And learn. And so we go and we do this, that, close the pump, fix it, and then, you know, it's back up. Because
do you remember most of the first time he showed you how to do something that you didn't know how to do, and then you're just like, that fucking worked.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
What? Yeah. It was the percussive maintenance of like,
all right, the inside, the outside of everything there.
I need the orange hammer, not the black one.
Yeah.
The orange mallet. So you show up with like the one with the blue handle.
Is that, no, no, no.
No, no, no. I need the orange hammer.
And he also knew exactly where it was. He was like, no, no. Mm-hmm. The drawer below that to the right.
And so you'd bring him the orange one and he'd like hit this thing and it'd just start working. But it like, I'm telling you, sometimes you would bring the wrong hammer and you'd be like, Tom, all right, I tried to fix this valve, right? A steam valve. He's like, well, what hammer you hit it with? I was like, well, the red-handled one. He goes, no, you got to use the orange one. And you hit it with like 50% power. And it's like, gee, I mean, you know. Yeah. But it worked. Like, yeah.
Because he made it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, he did.
Not a jack of all trades, a master of all trades.
For sure. So like at Silos, we have the keg washer that I started washing kegs on. I'm pretty sure it's older than me, but like I think we all, you know, use that thing for so
many
long.
Times. That was one of the first things I volunteered doing.
That was the worst keg washer ever.
Oh, it was terrible because it was designed 35, 40 years ago. But then, like, so God, how many hands did it change before? Like obviously Thomas Cree had it.
Thomas Cree had it. Tom just finished building the forehead.
Upstate,
yeah, we wanted some outdoor furniture, and I had seen at the time Upstate Craft Beer Company, which is now A-State, they were selling a bunch of outdoor furniture. So I call up Jack and I'm like, hey man, so you got all this furniture for sale, you guys need a keg washer? And he was like, oh, matter of fact, we do need a keg washer. So we traded that two-head keg washer to them for some furniture. And we might have gave them some ingredients, you know, whatever. Yeah. Made some kind of other trade. Well, I think they were cleaning out their storage unit, saw that I was opening a brewery, and called me. And I got it back from Magnetic South.
But you never turned it on, did you?
No. So I put it in storage for, 2 years. And then we were cleaning out our storage unit. And I know we had just bought a new keg washer, and I knew you were opening Silos, and honestly just didn't want to deal with it. Is it working?
I knew it had been sitting, and also it was an ancient machine, and talking about the percussive maintenance, so that's what made me think of it, is so it had these diaphragm valves that, like, ones I had never seen. I don't even think they make them anymore.
No, dude, they do. I'm telling you, the place is over in Donaldson Center. It's some like sketchy warehouse. And I don't know the name of it, but I mean, that was another thing that Tom knew. Tom knew where to go get anything. You want needed this rare nut and bolt that is this off the, and he's just like, yep, it's over there.
I remember when he got Fox to put like actual stainless parts into their thing, he'd call and be like, hey, I need this stainless piece. And now it's like available through the Fox magazine, the book.
Yeah. I guess. But yeah, so it does work. It took some percussive maintenance, but not a hammer. He told me, grab a Phillips head screwdriver, flip it around, use that side. Because he was like, I replaced those valves for like the ones that are on it. And I was like, I forgot I did that. And I was like, because it's not the normal diaphragm valve.
So those are the same diaphragm valves that he used for the glycol. For like A through G in that first warehouse. Because it was the same. It'd be like, oh shit, we can't get this tank to close. And he'd just take out that huge knife that man would carry with, you know, had a bifold open it. And he'd just take it and tap the valve and it'd start working again.
Yeah. But it works great now.
It's really cool to see. I mean, his legacy is going to live on in every brewery in Greenville.
And unfortunately, all of you. Like, and I'm glad we're doing this because there's so many things that I don't think people realize, those little effects that he had, the ripple effect of like, it just keeps spreading. I mean, it's nuts. I mean,
because the things that now like Kenny's learning and passing down to the people that he's working with, because like even all three of us have worked together.
Yeah.
Well, I can take it back from whenever I first started brewing, which in like 2012, I was homebrewing. And I'd come into Thomas Creek and like pick up my ingredients, do all kind of stuff. I meet all of you guys and like, you know, Zach's running around like a crazy person.
Building him a little like tiny Zach. Home.
And then he built him a little tiny home. But he'll come over and talk to me about something. Or I talked to Tom about a recipe and started there, you know. That was just me being a part of it. And then growing into where I was getting tired in IT and they were moving to the company to Charlotte. I didn't want to move to Charlotte. And it just happened to be me and my dog. And I called Tom one night. I'm like, Tom, I don't want to be in a cubicle anymore, man. Can I pursue a dream and just come work at the brewery? I'll do anything you want. He's like, well, we actually need somebody to run the homebrew shop right now. I'm like,
sold.
Just let me come in. You know, we talked back and forth. And a week later, I'm working at the brewery. And here I am now, years later, running my own brewery.
Yeah.
Did you have any knowledge of brewing at that time, or was it just...
So when I started homebrewing,
you were homebrewing. He knew you had some knowledge, right?
And he was teaching the homebrew classes.
That's right.
Jared was teaching the homebrew classes at Thomas.
That was a lot of my volunteer stuff. The nights you're talking about on Sundays are like third or fourth shift. We hanging out with the guys, like playing beer pong or whatever it was, and then eventually I just fell in love with making beer.
Jared was there. He'd come in and like we'd be brewing or, you know, whatever, working a late shift. And just like a lot of us, like where I wasn't a brewer, but I seen these guys were struggling, so I could jump in and help them. You know, same like Jared.
You guys were all just friends hanging out.
Yeah, Jared would come in at 6 o'clock when he got off work, and he'd just be there drinking a beer and see that we're like the mash tun need to be dug up. So he'd just go over there and start doing it, you know, like.
But I think
and Tom appreciated that. Like, those were things that he may not have given you a lot of recognition, like, right? He might not have come up to you every day and said, hey, man, I appreciate what you're doing, right?
But when he did.
But when he did, it was an emotional thing because you felt it. But, you know, he noticed. He saw everything you would do because you would get maybe some minuscule reward, right? Like, hey, man, I need this. And, like, you know, he knows that you would give for him, so he would give for you, right? Like, Tom had... And the whole family, right? You know, him and his wife, Terry, I think half the packaging line lived with them for years, right? Like, their house was a revolving door, just like the brewery, where, hey, I need a job. I also need a place to live because I'm in a bad situation, or I just don't have a house, or, you know, whatever. And they would employ you. They would put you up. I mean, we spent Christmases over there. I mean... Jared and I have gone to pool parties over there. Like, hey, we just call them on a Saturday. We want to come over the house because I know you guys are there. Can we come swim in the pool? We'll bring a charcuterie board. And, you know, we just show up at their house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the Christmas party went from, and a lot of people complained because when I came on, they would go out for dinner for a Christmas party.
That's why we complained,
because
you came on.
Oh, God.
Goodness. This guy?
God.
Like, they would go out for dinner for Christmas, like a holiday staff party. And it changed, and they started doing it at the house. But, I mean, it felt more homely. Like, let's go do it at the house. Yeah. Right? Like, it felt like you got Thanksgiving, Christmas dinner, and then Christmas dinner again. You know, because it was a bunch of – Rachel would make them brownies and them cookies. You know, like, there'd be booze, beer, you know, stories. Like, one year we broke out wigs and – I mean, you know, you just go there and party.
Dude, even as hard as it was for, like, us to leave Thomas Creek and go do something else because of how much we loved, you know, Tom and the family and everything, we could still call him. Be like, I can remember calling Tom. Tom, I can't remember how many layers comes on a pallet of cans. How many cans come on? Just because I...
16s or 12s.
Exactly. And then you
know, sometimes you... Are they 48 by 48 pallets or the 48 by 36?
Tom could be the brewery. He's the brewery Google, you know? Yeah. You could call him. He would know. And even as hard as it was to like, there's so many emotional times when people would leave because you felt like you were leaving the family
and it would be an argument. You would leave and it would be, you know, fuck this and fuck that. But you know, it's everyone got emotional because we were all so close. Right. And like to be able to turn around and look back on that now, I mean, I think that changes everything, right? Like, you know, when I left, I know he was upset. When Kenny left, he was upset, but I don't think he cared about Jared.
No, not at all.
But, you know, it's because, right? He he put time and energy into you. You put time and energy into him. Mm-hmm. You helped grow his business. He helped grow you personally. I mean, you were, you know, a son. You were a child to him. You know, we all looked up to him like he was a father figure. Like, same. Like, you had a problem, you could go talk to Terry, you know, his wife. Yeah, you, like...
Dude, just a couple
you
weeks
could go
ago.
Back there and talk to Bill and Drake and Rachel. Like, they would entertain anything you had to say, you know.
And just a couple weeks ago, all of us at his house, we actually all got a chance to say goodbye to Tom. And us all being there. Just
I didn't say goodbye. I said thank you. Just want to put that out there.
And
I just... I looked at him and I was just like, I just want to say thank you. Mm-hmm. And... sorry to bogart this.
No,
I
but
just,
that's it. That's
the look on his face was like, he like winked at me, and the look he was giving me was like, oh God, that hurt. So I was just like, all right, I gotta go. But man,
it was one of the hardest things.
Yeah.
And sorry to keep bogarting you, Jared.
No, you're not.
It was one of the hardest things. Like, a bunch of us all went in together. Kenny said some words. Like, we gave him a hug and left. And then, like, slowly, one by one, started going back in the room and, you know, like saying a piece, right? Like, you know, I told him I was proud of everything he did. And, you know, you could see like he was proud of everything that I was doing. You know, again, thanked him for everything that he did for not only me, but the whole industry. And I will tell you, it was one of the hardest things that I've ever done in my life was to, you know, like if it was this hard with this man, I can't imagine what it's going to be like with my own parents. You know, it was just... There were so many tears spread that whole day.
We drank a whole bottle of that whiskey.
I mean, we drank 8 cases of domestic beer, which he would have hated. He would show up to that man's house with a case of like whatever, and he'd just be so, get that shit out of my house.
You want water, it's in the pool.
Yeah.
That's right.
But
that day, just everybody being there, you know, it was one of those, even though...
Zach and his little sonnet thing that he said, that little... Were you on the porch when he said that?
Yes, it was. Irish.
He like sang this, and I don't know if it was a song or like something he just spoke from the heart, but it was like this Irish spoken word poetry that... Yeah. I mean, you know, I wish I could remember what it was because it was that emotional.
It was good. It was a hard day, but you know, I'm glad we had that time and everybody coming together. I mean, it expanded multiple states of people that were like coming down to see Tom. People I haven't seen in forever. Whenever we had the celebration of the life at Thomas Creek. Oh my gosh, the amount of people I haven't seen in years.
300 people there.
I mean, even like Josh. I would say at Thomas Creek, the packaging line flipped like a lot more. Right, like
yeah.
And so those people that you would see come in every 6 months and then leave and whatever.
Nobody was allowed to go to QT alone.
Yeah. It was a shock to see all those people. But it felt good to like shake some hands and, you know, reconnect, if you will.
Old stories coming up that I've forgotten because I haven't seen this person forever. And that
there was easily 300, 400 people there. I mean, it was nuts.
But it was a huge family too because everyone has their own like similar but different stories with Tom or... Thomas Creek or whatever it was, you know, like I saw someone that I hadn't seen in 6 years or something that, or like they were coming there before the tap room was built. And then they're like, you look so familiar. I was like, where do I know you? And then, you know, just like being able to talk to those people and like this huge family that it became, that all these people came out of the woodwork just because of the reach that it had. And yeah, it's nuts. I mean, like, yeah, I didn't get to work with Jared at Thomas Creek, but...
not officially.
Yeah.
It was horrible. It was like, always late.
So, I mean, but we were like, we became brothers.
Jared, what did I say? Yeah. 15 minutes early, you're late.
I remember walking in about 10 minutes early and you'd be like, nuh-uh, you're late.
But I mean, like we call each other, text each other like in our personal lives now. Like, I mean, we went through a shared experience and... I mean, how is it that we come from different walks of life and everything? And but yet we can do that on a personal level, not just work. It's not like a work buddy that you see out in public and you go, hey, man, how's life? It's like, we know. Like, we've been to each other's weddings, soon to be his wedding. And, you know, it's like, it's a big deal. It created our lives, our foundations, and who we are.
I mean, something like me and Sean Lally and Adam Cribb from Quest, We had met and started meeting on Fridays at Papa's and Beer, right? We went to this Mexican restaurant to drink 32-ounce Dos Equis on draft and eat chips to honestly, like, get together and just bitch, right? We wanted to complain. And then that slowly grew into, like, all right, Kenny's back. Jared's here. You know, this big brewers group. Coalition. Yeah, so we, like, dubbed this thing the Upstate Brewers Coalition. And even that, like, has evolved from a bunch of us sitting in a Mexican restaurant to Jared just, like, texting me and saying, like, hey, man, I need a bucket lunch, which is now what we call it. Yep. You know,
because we all went, had a brewers camp out in July. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, said to everybody,
let's go camping.
We used to all, like, we go to music festivals, or not music festivals. Well, we used to go to Burning Man together.
I miss that so much.
But we go to, like, beer festivals together, try to get rooms together. Like, hey, who's going to CBC or who's going to the Guild? Mm-hmm. Let's get houses.
You guys are
going
to make me learn how to brew beer just so I can come hang
out. Dude, it's great.
I mean, it's great. Like, I mean, these are my
brothers.
Not.
Like, that's the whole, these are my brothers. Like, so we, not just Thomas Creek Quest and everything, we all have this background of the upstate, like the big breweries.
Yeah.
And it's like going to college.
Can you name another city that's like, I know brewers in Charleston. They don't have this, like,
no,
like
no and like I know like Holy Asheville. City guys pretty good. And they even say, like, they're pretty tight knit, like, in the Charleston area because they all know each other.
Yeah.
But it's different. Well, because we've all worked together. And
I think the unique thing is the center of Tom.
Yeah, because like Jared even mentioned that. Quest, but like the dudes from Quest, Adam Cribbs or Peter Kalormis or, I mean, Sean Lally, but you know, they
what's Starbridge Brothers' name that's now making whiskey in like Ireland or whatever? Yeah. John Wilcox? Oh, no. Maybe he wasn't at Quest. Maybe that was somewhere else. Yeah,
but anyways, you know, they would still come
Peter.
Over.
It was
like,
Peter. It was Peter.
Because Thomas Creek was the OG, the big spot that, like, you know, I remember the, this is like 2015 or something. We did Upstate Craft Beer Week. And so it was like Thomas Creek, Brew 85, and Quest. And we were the only three breweries. Like, now to think about that is like, oh, there's only three. No. But, you know, so we all decided to like brew the same or similar beer. And then like we went to each other's places. So even then it was still like super tight knit. And then that just expanded. So like, that's why, you know, Sean and Cribs and, you know, like they're still all in the fold, if you will. They weren't at Thomas Creek, but
even Sean at Birds, who did stuff through Thomas Creek and now has Birds Fly South.
Yeah.
And David, to go back to David the contract selling stuff. East. I mean, you know, like it, there's a big, it, the circle is huge. Like, I mean, you know, 14 breweries. I mean,
I wish,
you know,
Sean was here. Would Birds be Birds without Thomas Creek? Like, they got their launch because of that. Where else, like, him and Lindsay moved here and then they wanted to start this and it was a goal, but like
making those sour beers, like they like what Sean wanted to do. Yeah. That takes time. You can't just open up a brewery and have sour beers.
And Tom was so anti sour stuff and still let like Sean come in. And
we had a lot of ask for forgiveness at Thomas Creek.
So what is everybody's favorite story of Tom? Let's kind of go through that. Of,
you know, I can't tell you mine.
what can I legally say? No.
I don't have per se one favorite story. It'll probably come to me later, but so I left Thomas Creek, moved to North Dakota of all places to learn how to open a brewery without my own money. I mean, that's the honest truth of it. And
best way to do it.
Yeah. But I mean, I learned so much at Thomas Creek in such short amount of time, you know, almost 3 years that it allowed me to do that. And we reached max capacity while I was there. Whatever. Then I came back, and while was working on building Double Stamp, Southern Side, Silos, Tom...
Five Forks.
R.I.P. Tom needed help in the homebrew shop. He was like, hey, I know this isn't necessarily what you want to do, but you know about beer. You know the place. So went back, and that's when I actually got to know Tom, I think, better than I ever did before. Like, when we first did hard lemonade or ginger years ago, it was like me and Tom staying overnight and we talked about stuff and you learn a little bit, but it was when he had the kitchen, when the kitchen was slow and I'm closing, you know, Jared used to come to these sidearm Thursdays, but you know, Tom would be hanging out and it's slow at different parts and
just asking Tom about random things and start hearing stories about like, you did personal security for who? You did what? Like,
the story.
Who is this man? And then like, it's corroborated by other, I'm not going to.
People?
Yeah. Yeah. Podcasts about
the bad things in the South. I learned more stories about Tom like that recently. Like just us all getting together, talking to Tom stories and be like, I had no idea he did that.
Yeah. So that's my favorite, like maybe not Tom's story, but it's like those things you didn't expect outside of the brewery.
Well, I mean, that was like the memory. 80s and yeah. 90s here in Greenville.
And that mustache. That,
I thought you were going to say the Mustang because he had a Mustang. Too. I mean, you know, the stories that he would tell us of just like, you know, it's the 80s and 90s here, Greenville. Downtown is still super sketch, right? Like his father, Bill, who also, you know, owned the brewery that, you know, his Tom and Bill started the thing. You know, Bill was an architect, had a big firm.
They did the Peace Center downtown.
Did the Peace Center, built a lot of schools. I mean, the stories of Bill that would, you know, he's talking about.
Had his first beer at the SO Club, the PBR.
You knew what color they were dyeing fabric at the mills because what color the river was. You know, on Fridays, it was always filled with soap. You know, like Bill was here in those times. Like Tom grew up in those times, you know, laying brick and.
The time they said he fell off like a two-story like scaffolding and almost broke his whole back.
I didn't hear that one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they had farmland. What? They were like, I'm pretty sure they had like animals and stuff yeah. like the grandparents did. Like
they did.
You know, it was every part of like the country life to the city life of him leaving the bar, working downtown, carrying three packs of cigarettes, smoking a cigarette because this man smoked. Chain smoked cigarettes, and then one day just decided he was going to quit
cold turkey. Three packs a day.
He's like, yeah, I'd be walking over from the bar at 2 a.m. downtown carrying three packs of cigarettes, smoking one, and someone would ask me for one, and he'd be like, sorry, I don't have one. I mean, you know, if that was just,
that generation was built different as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that was just Tom, right? Like,
that was I don't think I have a favorite Tom story because there's so many Tom stories. And yeah. They're different situational.
They're just Tom one stories, of your favorite you know? Memories.
But I think one thing I would like to talk about is one of my favorite Terry stories, which is his wife.
Okay.
And this is a day that I was when I was working at Thomas Creek, and Terry is always she's a talker. She's fun living, all this kind of stuff, right? And one day I was just like, Terry, you know what? You want to go beer to beer today? Like we were working.
How dare you?
I know, but it was a challenge. And Terry's like, "Let's go." So I'm like, "Okay, up the creek." Oh, that's a 12.5% like IPA, like barley wine.
She can hang.
Well,
she can hang.
Yeah,
you're not married. She can hang to a point. 30-something yeah, exactly. years. Well,
that and that's like an testament because like how much she loved Tom and how much Tom loved her and how they just they were perfect for each other, right? So we went beer to beer. And yeah, about like six up the creeks in, which is a lot. It's like four bottles of wine right there.
Yeah. I couldn't deal with all that malty sugar belly.
No, I know. But it was just so funny because then you get to see Terry just like having such a beautiful day and like just loving and drunk. It's just so we
how many
fun,
cigarettes did you know? Bum from her that
oh,
day?
Oh my goodness, dude. That was back when I smoked cigarettes and more than likely we went through two or three packs. No, but it was just it was one
I mean,
of those things
was just the kind you knew you're gonna you have fun work,
you know,
right? Like you, yeah.
And everything was gonna get done. Like we had enough trust in everybody.
You were
like,
responsible.
Yes. Well,
or Jared was like, all right guys, you got it.
You got
fun
it.
Day.
Someone else answer the phone.
I don't want to. That was it. So the beginning when we're talking about like as your senior is funny because like cousin wanted to say it, so technically Kenny would be like your senior.
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe well, once not, removed. I once was removed. Working at the same time he was, just in a different place.
It goes down
after I started.
I mean, everybody starts as the pro senior. Everybody starts as the new guy that's doing the grunt work.
Oh, and it's fun to.
Yeah.
Was I like the last new guy? Honestly, I might have been.
Justice.
Yeah.
So you weren't the baby.
Well, that's Justice's
middle
senior.
Child.
Yeah, because once
the only one I got.
Once you left, Kenny left, Justice left. It was just Josh and I, and then Josh was there alone till.
I mean,
March, February?
No.
No, what was his name? The guy that came.
Derek?
No, who's before Derek?
Oh, Derek's there now. I can't remember
Mark?
The guy's name.
Mark, that was it, Mark.
Yeah, so
why do I know? I wasn't even.
So what's, I mean, what's the follow-on for Thomas Creek? What happens from here?
Well, hopefully they just keep making their beer. The contracts they do, like, really keeps them going. And the guys there now, like, they have Don from Quest, who was formerly Catawba and whatnot. He's there. And Derek, who they brought down from Minnesota. Those guys are doing a great job right now. It's going to be one of those things that need support.
It scares me. Because Tom was so involved. If everything we've said like doesn't pinpoint exactly how involved he was with everything, fixing everything, you know.
There wasn't a day that he wasn't there. I remember when he got sick the first time with Wegener's disease. And
the one time he got sick.
I mean, I think everything had changed, right? Like, I was there for the big change. Because when I'd come on, like, some of the guys that were there, like, look, don't expect to be able to, like, brew what you want. You know, like. Tom was there hands-on 15 hours a day brewing beer with these guys in the shit. And then he got sick the first time and kind of definitely took a step back. You know, then built the kitchen and was right back in it.
Yeah.
But there's never going to be another Tom.
Right.
And that was a man among men.
Burton Mold.
But he put his legacy in like 15 different people, 25 different people
mm-hmm.
that now are all...
And there's people that work there, like Ben Foster, that aren't even in the industry anymore, that still have gained some level of experience, whether it's learning how to be a dad, learning how to be a business owner, you know, a grandfather, or, you know, just overall, like, good, decent human being. You know? Just
all of you've kind of moved on and you have your own things, but it's like, how do you carry on the legacy of specifically Thomas Creek as a group?
I mean, we'll do whatever it takes, I guess, to help them survive. And I think that, like, they're in really good hands. They're making some needed changes that need to happen for the business to continue to, you know, really survive. I mean, just to be frank, right? Like,
I mean, I've got a selfish answer.
Okay, let's hear
it. A rising tide raises all ships. So the better we can do individually, it brings awareness to Greenville that, you know, maybe hasn't been there. Asheville, Charlotte, even Atlanta, now they're all still seen. Charleston, I mean, it's like they're big beer destinations, and Greenville I think is a little bit overlooked, but the better we do, and it's like, oh, these people came from Thomas Creek, they have real chops, they know all this stuff, and by proxy it'll help Thomas Creek, because you know, they
preserving
have
the legacy.
So I mean, I think the best we can do individually while helping each other, like, hey, I got a problem with, you know, this yeast strain is stalling. Like, have you ever seen that before? But I think the best we can do individually also helps the legacy of Thomas Creek and Thomas Creek itself.
And it's funny to see it all turn around now, right? Like, so the people that are there running Thomas Creek, you know, Pierce, his son, you know, Drake, the daughter, Terry, you know, like, I'm sure all of us at this table have received a phone call sometime in the past week of,
from somebody there. Yep.
I need some help. You know, I know you were here. I got to replace this. Or, which
hammer am I supposed to use?
Yeah. I mean, like, there's been, hey, who did you use for this? What supplier? This is broken. This ain't, can you come by? Can you look at this? You know, like, and we're all still here, right? That's, a lot of people say all the time that the market's oversaturated, or, hey, you know, a brewery's opening up to another brewery. How are you going to, like, deal with this competition? The best thing that we learned all by working at Thomas Creek is there's no competition. It's all a brotherhood, right? Like Kenny said, rising tide doesn't sink ships, or whatever that
say,
you know, whatever.
Almost. Here, I'm going to say,
you know, like, I mean, it's the truth, right? Well, Greenville is far from oversaturated. Mm-hmm. I think until it's like Asheville, where you can walk everywhere, we're all still here. We all still communicate, you know, and we welcome outsiders in. Right, like these people that come in and are opening breweries, it's like, hey, you know, if you need me, I'm here.
Yeah.
Well, that, and like right now, what was really what we're doing with like the Legacy Red, that's the continuing their legacy. So, like, you know, if anything, go out and buy that beer.
Yeah.
From every brewery.
Tap Takeover coming hopefully in February.
With Tap,
With the, I guess I'll just say it all. Community Tap sometime in February. We should be doing a Legacy Tap Takeover. So they'll get a bunch of the different Legacy Red Ale brews from different breweries and put them on tap. So that way you can try them all against like the real thing. So
did we already say where proceeds are going to for all this Legacy stuff?
So those proceeds are going to the family.
Yeah,
that's the Davis, the big thing. It is going to the Davis family, not to Thomas Creek or whatnot. It's there to support them as they've been supporting us through all of our, you know, time with them. But for just that testimony of why we all want to do it, there's even breweries I know doing it just because they know Tom, like Tom, they met him once, they answered a question or something like that. So that's us as a community right now continuing on. We always talk to each other. I mean, the reason we're here today is because, you know, text each other back and forth.
Say the reason you're here, Jared.
Because Kenny thought it'd be good. No, because Cuz definitely invited us over here, right?
Yeah.
Number one podcast video.
And thanks, Brad and Tabby Hour for thank really having us on here. And
this is great.
And letting us help spread the word.
Yeah.
But I want to do whatever we can do. I mean, it's such a cool story. And let's get a rotation of it, because there's not just three guys that this guy, that Tom impacted. He impacted so many people's lives, and whatever we can do. But let's keep it going. And so we'll make sure and link everything, but cheers. Cheers to Tom.
I want
to,
yeah.
We'll do a closing cheers.
Yeah. I need a splash.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going.
Maybe not as much as the first one.
It's aggressive. Maybe a tiny, pour your own.
It is a very, very close. Oh, look close at
that. That's a whole splash.
I mean, that's a splash.
It's very close to Pappy, though.
I mean,
yeah, it's fantastic.
It's surprisingly close.
Guy not to be named.
I mean, to chase it with the Stella.
This is
epic.
To Tom.
Yeah.
To Tom. Sorry, I'm not standing.
I don't know why I stood up.
I'm in the middle.
I was just making sure to get everybody.
I wanted to get it.
Well, Brad set the example to stand up, so.
Oh, delicious.
But so, in closing, I guess we can close this down. I'd like to say, like, thanks to the whole Davis family for,
sincerely,
you know, giving me a chance. I mean, everyone a chance. You know, if you can and are willing to be able to donate, get onto the legacyliveson.org. There's instructions on how to donate. There's also a meal train going around still, I think, which you can just search meal train Davis family. You know, print posters, stickers, they all got QR codes on there. So,
hey, go by the brewery and have a beer.
Go by the brewery, have a beer. Buy their beer at a Total Wine. Ask for their beer at a, you know, your favorite beer spot.
Yeah, just because Tom is gone doesn't mean Thomas Creek is. I mean, that dude's still with me every day. There's shit that I do that I'm just like, Tom, why are you still with me?
I mean, even in frustration, right? Mm-hmm. Just to like, man, we were canning the other day, and I had a rage quit, you know, and I just hucked a can across the brewery, you know, which was, you know, just sometimes you just need that. And it felt so good, you know, but, you know, I don't think I'd be here where I am about to open two more breweries without the experience and everything that I learned at Thomas Creek. Would I have maybe been in the brewing industry?
Maybe.
I mean, maybe.
Dude, there's no way I would be. I had a job at GHS I had a job at GHS doing IT. I'd be still doing IT and probably make a lot more money than I make right now. But that's not the point, because I love it. This is something that I wanted to do. I didn't even know I wanted to do it until I started doing it, right? It's just a passion.
You'd probably be a lot fatter than me if you were still in IT.
Well, I thought I'd come to the brewery and start losing weight because you're walking around doing stuff. That, nope, stayed the same. A lot of beer.
That's
the balance. Dude, there's absolutely no way I'd be where I am. I met my wife doing homebrew classes even when I worked there. We're married, and just I'm a head brewer at a brewery right now.
Yeah.
If I'd guessed that 5 years ago,
I'd be in the industry, but I don't think I'd be where I am.
Would you have gone to like packaging doing something else? Doing packaging shit?
He'd only have like one brewery, not three.
That's true.
But even that skill of being able to do everything at the brewery, something that...
I mean, I'm telling you, I'd probably still be in retail somewhere. There's, I don't think I would have made the career change.
Talking Tom stories, I just realized I had a conversation with Tom one night that I said, I don't want to do what you do. And here I am doing what the fuck he does.
I mean, look at me. Same thing, though, right? I wanted to be in sales. Gross. Like, no offense to any salespeople out there, but I mean, it just, I mean, ugh.
Well, let's close out with, let's get everybody together and do a happy hour at Thomas Creek. And we'll do.
You sure you want to do that?
Yeah. Let's do a happy hour at Thomas Creek. Everybody together. We'll announce it. It's announcing here whenever this drops. We'll get the date together. We'll get everybody together. And it'll be a public event in memory of Tom.
Yeah,
it'll be
sweet. Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do it.
Absolutely.